This spring, the so-called Less is More law will take effect in New York, overhauling the state's parole process to make it easier for New Yorkers released from prison to stay out of jail by changing the way minor technical parole violations are handled and increasing access to the court system so New Yorkers on parole don't linger behind bars. In November, we heard from the assembly sponsor of the new law about what she envisions will happen with implementation. And then in December, we heard the concerns from the state's parole officers. And with the new year, we're getting a new perspective, checking in with Alana Sivan, a former public defender and current advocate for progressive criminal justice reform. Welcome to the show, Alana.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I want to start our conversation not by talking about the way minor violations are handled under the law, which I think is getting a lot of the headlines regarding less is more, but talking about what this law means in terms of access to a judge for New Yorkers on parole, which feels like one of the under-examined portions of the law. Can you explain how the current system works for New Yorkers on parole who might need to get in front of a judge and how that'll change once this law takes full effect?
Yeah, so under the current system, people can automatically be incarcerated without having a hearing. And, you know, while they're waiting for a hearing. Under the new system, there's an established right to counsel at all parole revocation hearings. And also the hearings have to be conducted in a more speedy fashion. So for people detained, hearings need to be completed within 35 days. For people who are at liberty in the community, hearings must be completed within 55 days rather than the current 105 days. And also the hearings need to happen in the community rather than inside jails, which is huge when it comes to increasing transparency and access for witnesses, loved ones, the general public, that sort of thing.
Is it your sense that the current 105-day maximum wait is being utilized for most parolees in New York, or is it a rarity that someone is behind bars waiting that full period, which is more than 3 months?
You know, I would have to look at the data to see what the case was or what the case is in terms of 105 days, like if that's the maximum that's utilized. But like I can say right now, you know, when it comes to the 35 days, there are people who are in who have, you know, or one of the things that the governor has done is released those people. So we know that there were people who are in past that amount of days.
Well, do you have any sense of whether the length at which people are waiting to get before a judge is a product of just a lack of judges to hear these cases or some other rationale? Because it seems like if it's a lack of judges, that just requiring people to get seen sooner might not even happen if there aren't people present to hear those cases.
Well, I think, too, the nature of less is more is going to make it so that caseloads are going to be a lot lower, particularly because we're going to have processes in place like good time credits that will incentivize people to follow parole rules and lower caseloads to more manageable amounts so that there will be fewer cases coming in front of judges to begin with.
Can you talk a little bit about that good time portion you just mentioned?
Sure. So under the law, basically people who are on parole and spend a good amount of time actually following the rules. And this is something that we see that is based on positive laws that have passed in other states, that they will be able to earn time off their sentence. This is something that's really effective. It's something that results in people lowering recidivism, people being successful on parole, and something that we've seen be passed in places that are like a little bit more moderate and a little bit more conservative. Places like Arkansas, Arizona, Georgia, Idaho, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina, and Utah. And so it's something that's going to be really effective, not just in reducing recidivism, but also in making sure that, you know, caseloads are lower and we're going to have a more manageable system where people are actually able to benefit from due process.
Why does it make sense to accelerate a person's time on parole if there's some sort of conditions for their release which have, say, a period of time in which they're supposed to be monitored and conditions in which they're supposed to be followed? Why shouldn't they have to follow the complete process in order to go back into society without any strings attached?
Well, there aren't any strings attached, again, because this is something that, you know, the string attached is that they are following the rules, that they are engaging productively in society. And I think ultimately it's going to be something that's more beneficial for public safety. If people are following their rules, are engaging and participating in being beneficial members of society, you know, getting good jobs, able to be helpful in their communities and their families and their homes with their loved ones, then that benefits everyone. And it also saves money. I mean, there's projected cost savings that are going to come about from less is more that could be brought into things in the community that actually are really effective at preventing crimes, things like cure violence programs, things like restorative justice programs, all those sorts of things that ultimately will result in a net benefit. And it's also something that, again, reduces recidivism. So it's worth it because ultimately it creates a safer, more just society.
So turning to the big talking point that proponents of this measure rally around, which is the idea that people on parole shouldn't be returning to jail or be violated for parole because of minor violations like being late to an appointment or other somewhat trivial things that could eventually put them back in jail. Can you talk about how those type of violations have been used in the past and how they're going to be utilized as the result of this law?
Yeah. So, I mean, under the current system, we see that New York imprisons more people for technical violations like parole or like technical violations of parole, like missing an appointment with a parole officer, being late for curfew, and more than every other state in the country. And again, this is something that costs taxpayers more than $1 billion a year and reincarcerating thousands of people every year. And by the way, most of the people who are reincarcerated are Black or Latino, Latina, Latinx. And again, it costs New York State a good amount of money. And so, again, under this new system, that for most technical violations, people will not be able to be incarcerated. And that's something that's really important. And something that will create a more just system and is something that models what other states do and is also something that will free up caseloads again so that we can actually focus on violations that actually cause harm.
When we heard from a representative of the state's parole officers, he made the case that New Yorkers on parole aren't going back into jail for one minor violation. It's usually for 5, 6, 7, and that it's eventually a plea down to just one violation, which sends someone back, and that it's a false argument to say that everyone's going back just because of one violation. What do you say of that reality that was painted on the show?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, an overwhelming number of people are locked up for technical violations, not crime.
Right, so violations of what they were released for. So they were released under certain conditions, and they're violating them. So I mean, I don't think there's anyone saying they're crimes. I think they're just saying that they are breaking their agreement.
Sure, sure. And everything, but again, sort of what Spence said was that people essentially aren't locked up for technical violations, but every single violation he mentioned was technical.
No, I don't think, he just said they wouldn't be put behind bars, at least what he was were saying for the most part was that people wouldn't be sent behind bars for one violation. He was making the case that it was the product of multiple violations. So is that wrong?
You know, I mean, again, a lot of the things that he said, I mean, there was one point in the interview where...
No, but hang on, Alana, I'm asking you, my one question is, are people primarily going back behind bars for one violation, or is it for multiple violations?
I mean, all we can do is sort of look at the numbers of what people are actually going behind bars for.
Okay, and what's it look like?
I mean, there are over 5,000 people who are incarcerated for technical violations.
And does that mean that they are going back for one single violation or that they are going back because of multiple violations?
You know, I do want to, again, I want to take a step back here, and I'm not saying this to sort of avoid the question or anything like that, but I think that ultimately we also see the same sort of thing in the criminal legal system, right? Like in the non-parole system, where people will be charged with multiple things, overcharged in many cases, but the only one that actually stands a conviction is something that is really low, and that's something that's done intentionally. So I'll say that just because somebody is arrested on multiple technical violations, which, you know, I can't tell you whether or not that's the case overwhelmingly.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that that person, A, is committing all those violations, and B, like, again, if they're all non-technical, or if they're all technical,
right.
That's the most important point, because all of these things, again, are not crimes. They're costing taxpayers more than $500 million a year, and they don't do anything to provide public safety.
So then what will a minor violation result in moving forward?
So minor violations, people cannot be locked up for them. I mean, there are certain violations where people can be incarcerated, things like absconding, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But for minor violations, there can be sort of other consequences short of incarceration, which is important.
The parole officers have basically indicated that they want to keep track of how this plays out in terms of seeing, are people who commit what would have been minor violations, are they then going on to commit actual crimes as a way to gauge the success or effectiveness of this new law? How do you think the less is more law should be judged once it's fully implemented?
You know, I mean, I think more data is always good. I think that the data will show that people who are on parole are not predisposed to commit new crimes. Again, similar laws are passed all over the country,
mm-hmm.
or have been in effect all over the country. You know, we've seen that, you know, there was a study that in 2018, only 15% of people on parole nationwide were returned to serve a sentence on a new crime. And that represents fewer than 3% of all people on parole in New York State that year. So, you know, I think this idea that arresting people on technical violations is necessary to sort of prevent new crimes is A, unsupported by data, but B, also just, it's a little bit, it's not the function of parole, and we can't sort of operate in this sort of Minority Report kind of world where we're sort of, you know, using sort of our spidey senses to determine whether or not someone's going to commit a new crime.
And I don't even think that precog technology that Steven Spielberg showed off in Minority Report exists yet. But in all seriousness, talking about recidivism, is there a rate of recidivism amongst people who would have otherwise been reincarcerated for minor violations that is acceptable? For example, if it turns out that 10% of people who would have been reincarcerated because of minor violations go on to commit crimes, even though 90% don't, is that an acceptable ratio, or is there some other ratio that makes sense to you? And how do you think about it?
You know, it's hard to think about it in terms of numbers like that. I mean, I will say, first of all, that I think seeing an increase, I think that would be really unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also say, too, that for me, if I were to see an increase, which I don't think is going to happen, I think the response to that is to say, isn't going to be, okay, let's revert to the previous system that produced really disparate outcomes, that, you know, was produced really racist outcomes. I would say instead, okay, so what are we going to do instead to make sure that people are safe? What have we been doing with the freed up money that was freed up by Less is More to actually provide community support so that people aren't re-entering the criminal legal system? What sort of, you know, what is the impact of poverty on this? I think there are a lot of different things that come into play. And also just even going to sort of what are our police departments doing about this? So I think to say, to sort of blame sort of increases that, again, I don't think are going to happen, but let's go through this hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
I think to specifically blame them on Less is More, I think it neglects the whole picture.
And finally, one of the other concerns that Wayne Spence, who spoke on behalf of the parole officers in New York, raised was that the parole officers are really overworked right now. Do you think that this law will have the effect of reducing their caseloads and making them more effective, or do you have, I guess, less confidence in the overall parole officer infrastructure that exists right now?
I mean, I think, again, Less is More will lower caseloads and will make things a lot more manageable for parole officers. I have some faith in that the current system will be a lot better once Less is More is fully implemented. You know, I wish it could be implemented sooner rather than later. But, you know, I think I'm never going to say that I don't hear a parole officer who's saying they're overworked. But I also think that implementing this new system could change that significantly.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Alana Sivan. She's a former public defender and current advocate for progressive criminal justice reform in New York. Alana, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you again for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.